is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. In our first hour, we were the Violence Against Women Act. First of all, somebody brought this up. The Violence Against Women Act is to be partially reauthorized as part of the omnibus spending bill that the Republicans want to push through to keep the government from shutting down. But it's not a full renewal. And so there's some push for that. We'll get into that in a little bit. And, you know, Rod Rosenstein, we don't know yet if he's been fired, if he's quit, or if he's saying, hey, screw that, I'm going to hang on to this job unless you fire me. We'll find out probably within the next half hour or so. But there's a lot going on here and a lot of intersecting pieces. Jane Mayer has a new piece out in The New Yorker today. Of course, you know, the one that's getting all the attention is the salacious one. It's about the second woman who has come forward and said that that Kavanaugh pulled his pants down in front of her, essentially, in addition to a few other things. But her second piece is about, well, it's titled How Russia Helped Swing the Election for Trump. A meticulous analysis of online activity during the 2016 campaign makes a powerful case that targeted cyber attacks by hackers and trolls were decisive. That Trump would not be president, Pence would not be vice president, Betsy DeVos would not be education secretary, Phil, you know, right on down the line, if it wasn't for a foreign government intervening in our electoral processes. And that's pretty shocking. What do we do if we have a president who's not actually our president? Chauncey DeVega is on the line with us. He's a political essayist and commentator, contributor to Salon, host of the Chauncey DeVega Show podcast. ChaunceyDeVega.com, the website. You can tweet him at Chauncey DeVega. Chauncey, it's always great having you with us. Thanks. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So your most recent article over at Salon, or at least the most recent one that I've seen, is Donald Trump, Brett Kavanaugh, and Hostile Sexism, a concept that shapes our moment. And before I start digging into this, I laid a lot on the table in the setup before I brought you in. Is there any place in particular you would like to start?
Well, just thinking about what's happening in this trouble and tumult about Rosenstein and Trump firing him or not, what will happen? Folks need to keep their eye on the ball. On my podcast, I often say we have to maintain our perspective and search for a fixed point. What is this about? This is about chaos. Trump is a proto-fascist, American fascist, strives on chaos. So first reports are not to be believed. And always ask yourself, I tell folks this all the time on my podcast, always ask yourself, what is the bigger picture? Trump is a human chaos engine. So folks need to take a step back and connect the dots, as you and I like to say.
There was a very chilling, Louise and I went to see Michael Moore's movie over the weekend, and there was a very chilling moment in that movie, Fahrenheit 11-9, where somebody says, you know, there's this storm around Donald Trump. And then Moore plays this clip of Donald Trump saying, I am the storm. You know, with this look in his eyes like, oh, my God, I am the storm. And he's a one-man chaos machine. That's how he has, you know, whatever success he's had in his life, that's how he's gotten there. So in your conversations with David Smith, you got into the multiple issues about, you know, what motivated Trump voters. And we've had this conversation in the past in some ways, you and I, and many others as well, that, you know, it wasn't this poor, insecure, financially insecure white people group that got Trump, that voted for Trump, by and large. It was people who share his biases and his bigotry.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the narratives is these are poor, confused, white working class folks who, by the way, make on average about $73,000 a year. So they're not poor, that's for sure. And they were hoodwinked, bamboozled, confused. This is not who they really are. Well, as Sister Maya Angelou said, when someone shows you who they are, you better believe it.
Yeah.
These voters were conscious of what they were doing. They supported in a president who's racially resentful, who's bigoted, who's violent, who's a nativist. They voted for him for those reasons, not despite it. And what this new, I mean, very, very, very essential research by David Smith and Eric Hanley, who are at the University of Kansas. What this research does, very rigorously, looking at a big data set, American National Election Survey, is to say, okay, how is this connected to sexism? How is this connected to other values about rage, anxiety about, quote-unquote, losing their country? And I think in this moment with Kavanaugh, with Brett Kavanaugh, and America's rape culture in the White House, their concept of hostile sexism, where you have these mostly older, white, both male and female, but mostly male in this case, Trump voters who are mad at women, who are upset at changing America, it was both racism and sexism that put Trump in the White House.
Yeah, and we saw this in the Anita Hill, in the way that she was treated during the Clarence Thomas hearings as well. So if Donald Trump is in the White House because of Russian involvement in the election, what do we do with that? What do we make of that? I mean, people say, oh, 25th Amendment, impeach him. But then you got Pence. Pence is there because of Russian involvement also. If this book is accurate.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a phrase that others have used, and I'm going to start using it on a recurring basis, to describe the Republican Party and Trump voters, just like Vichy France with the Nazis. These are Vichy Republicans, right? They're basically supporting a traitorous, I would argue, and treasonous Republican Party, because it's not just Trump. We have all the public evidence of Russian involvement. In this new book, I mean, is just devastating. Again, anecdotes are not data. This is very, very rigorous work, looking at all the data we actually know publicly about how the Russians use Facebook and other social media to shape the information space. This is cyber warfare. So what do we do when we have an illegitimate president, because Trump is illegitimate by all accounts, never mind his behavior since getting elected? I have called, with many others, for a general strike. I think people should stop going to work. I think there should be mass disruption. There should be folks engaging in nonviolent protest. We need to make life inconvenient. And one of the ways you do that is you take your money out of the bank. Go after Trump's corporate sponsors. But the American people are so overwhelmed, so numb, they're stuck in a state of learned helplessness. And I hate to say it, and I said this on previous conversations with you here, Trump wins in 2020 if he's not impeached, because he has a diehard base of support who are part of a political cult. There's nothing this man can do. The Republicans have abandoned their responsibilities under the Constitution to provide any sort of balance to this man. And why is that? Because Trump is winning. He's doing everything that they want. And we need to emphasize that fact. This is not a disastrous president for these right-wing revanchists. He's their champion.
Yep. Yeah, he gave them the tax breaks. He's giving them the pollution, you know, the increased corporate profits that come along with it, and all these other things. Your thoughts on Noel Francisco replacing Rod Rosenstein, if that's what happens, or what happens if Rosenstein has been fired or quits?
Well, I mean, Mueller's already imperiled, but Mueller's a very, very smart man, and he's made sure that the states can proceed with prosecuting Trump and obviously his associates for any crimes. But as I said, the American people need to be out in mass when Mueller is gone, because if Francisco's put in there, he's just basically going to hobble it. And this is just one more example of Trump challenging, if not breaking, the guardrails of democracy, which is the rule of law. And I'll make one other observation. I've said this repeatedly. I'm actually working on a piece for Salon about this. There's this narrative that we're in a constitutional crisis. That's incorrect. We've been in a constitutional crisis since this man was elected, not before. And again, the mainstream corporate media is so obsessed with finding normality. They're afraid to use the F word. Fascism. They kept hoping that this man would pivot. They gave him billions of dollars in free advertising. We've been in a crisis for 2 years, and it's only going to get worse.
I would submit to you, Chauncey, that we have been in a constitutional crisis, absolutely, since 1968, since the year that Richard Nixon reached out to the South Vietnamese and said, if you will refuse to go along with the peace deal that LBJ has worked out with you successfully. Now, this was in August of 1968. If you will refuse to go along with this deal, I will make you rich. And they said, okay, cool. And they refused to go along with the deal, and the war went on for years, and Richard Nixon became president. And it's the only reason that he was able to beat Hubert Humphrey is because he could shoot that down. And then again, in 1980, when Ronald Reagan's campaign made a deal, Bill Casey made a deal with the Ayatollah, and now we have the former president of Iran, who was the president at that time, Bonnie Sauter, in the Christian Science Monitor, just coming right out and saying, you know, Ronald Reagan cut a deal with the Ayatollahs. I know about it. I was there. They were there. And, you know, and that's how he beat Jimmy Carter. And then you've got in 2000, George W. Bush, his brother knocking 60, 70, 80,000 African Americans off the voting rolls in Florida to get him within spitting distance of the election. And then a year later, when the vote is actually counted, we discover that the Supreme Court, which stopped the recount in Florida, had that recount continued across the entire state, that Al Gore actually won the election. I mean, I think that we have been so up to our eyeballs in constitutional crisis since the Republicans decided in 1968 that the law doesn't matter, treason doesn't matter. This is just the logical extension of it all.
Well, I mean, as Noam Chomsky famously said, this is a corporate democracy. Right? Yeah. This is not a real people's democracy. And looping back to Michael Moore's new documentary, you know, there's great research. I think it's probably one of the most important pieces of research in the last decade, if not 20 years. Larry Bartels, Martin Gillens out of Yale, looking at how elites in this country totally ignore, elected elites totally ignore the average American.
Yeah.
In Michael Moore's documentary, you can go across from gun control to health care to extending health care for all, the environment, cutting back this grotesque military budget, tax policy. The Republican Party and the Democrats are wholly ignoring the wishes of the American people. The American people are not center, right, or conservative. The American people are we, the people, progressive liberals.
Yeah.
Right? They have a real view of what democracy should be, but the Republicans and the corporate Democrats ignore them. So
this country
wasn't a democracy at the time of the founding. We're a democracy in progress, and we certainly have been derailed in the last 50 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the essence of the study out of Northwestern University that Page and Gillens did. We had, I forget if it was Page or Gillens, but we had one of them on the show back, you know, a couple of years ago when this came out, where they looked at, I believe it was since the 1980s, it might be more recently, but they looked at public opinion versus what kind of legislation gets passed. And they found that the interests and desires of the top 5%, as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong on this.
Yep, absolutely, yep.
Yeah, the interests and desires of the top 5% were predictably enacted into law, something like on the order of 70-some-odd percent of the time. Whereas the interests and desires of the bottom 95% of Americans, the probability of those being translated into law were statistically equivalent to random noise. In other words, nobody's listening. Right, in the political class. And this is a terrible thing. We've got to take our democracy back. Chauncey DeVega, chaunceydevega.com is the website. You can tweet him at Chauncey DeVega. Check out his podcast, it's great. And his most recent piece is in Salon. Chauncey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Always great talking with you. We'll be back with more of the news of the day. We'll keep you up to date on what's going on with Kavanaugh, with Rosenstein, all this stuff, plus your calls right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's 18 minutes past the hour. Talk media for the sane among us. And welcome back. Let's pick up some phone calls here. Lynn in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Lynn, thanks for watching or listening over on our website. What's up, Lynn?
Hi, Tom. I have a question for you, considering everything that's going on, that I'm kind of sensing a coup d'etat of some sort underway. I know we've been in a constitutional crisis for quite a long time, but what do you think the chances are? How could it happen that they cancel the election? Because it looks like it's going so badly against them.
As far as I know, just like there is no constitutional provision for dealing with an illegitimate president like Trump, there is also no constitutional provision for dealing with suspending elections. I think that the ability to suspend elections may be, I have heard it reported multiple times, that it was included in the first Patriot Act. Whether it's still there or not, I don't know. Whether it actually was there in the beginning, I don't know. Maybe if somebody's a scholar of that stuff and they know that, they might want to call in and let us know. But Lynn, I don't think that that's in the cards. And although you just never know. I mean, with Trump, anything's possible. Lynn, thanks for, it's a great question. It's a tough question. Dion in Southwest Missouri. Hey, Dion, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching us.
Any other condiments or dipping sauces?
Dion, you're on the air.
Yeah. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah. What's up?
I was listening to your interview, and I all that was well and good what he said about, you know, we have to riot in the streets or yeah. Take to the streets or take our money out of the banks or. A full-scale...
A general strike is what he was calling for. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, general strike.
It typically takes unions to make
that
happen.
I don't know how any of that helps, because that doesn't change the fact that a large group of the population, I'd say 60%, either doesn't know anything about what's going on or simply has the wrong ideas about everything. So I don't... I'm trying not to be negative, but I just don't see any way forward without the, you know, the we the people actually knowing things. And I don't know where that comes from, because listening to this show is great, and it's great to be informed, but it's very difficult, especially in Southwest Missouri, to talk to anyone in the public about any of this stuff and feel like I'm talking to someone on a different planet.
Hmm. Well, you don't have a single progressive radio station in the entire state of Missouri, to the best of my knowledge.
No.
And
no, that's why I get my information from YouTube.
Yeah, and Fox News is everywhere, and right-wing hate radio is everywhere, and that presents a really serious challenge. But that, I mean, that's just not true of Southwest Missouri. I had an Uber driver in L.A. Over the weekend who was giving me a right-wing rap about, these women with Kavanaugh, they sure did have some convenient timing, didn't they? And I'm like, where do you get your information? And he's like, I listen to talk radio. And I am like, in Los Angeles, you know, it's KPFK, and no, I listen to the, you know, and he's a born-again right-winger, and he certainly, you know, he looked like a perfectly reasonable guy, but turns out this is happening all over. Dion, I agree with your concern, and I share your diagnosis, and I don't think a general strike is going to solve our problem. I don't think it's going to happen, because we don't have enough unions like in countries where general strikes happen. But I think that at the polls, we can do something. Welcome back. Let's pick up some phone calls here and see what y'all are rolling around in your minds on this stuff. Larry in Broken Bow, Oklahoma. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind?
Hello, Tom. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine, Larry.
Okay, great. Hey, I appreciate you taking my call. I really enjoyed you on Bill Maher
this weekend.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was a hoot.
You did a great job. I wish you could have had the opportunity to present your theory about the two Santa Clauses, because that would have, I think.
Yeah, there was a possibility that was going to be part of the overtime segment, but they ran out of time, I think, or whatever.
I wish it would have, because I think that would have answered the guy from Fox's questions real easily. But anyway, I just want to get your take on something. The other state media hasn't been picking this up about Rosenstein, the whole thing about what's going on today. I just wonder what you think. Some of this relates back to the declassification of classified materials. If there's anything that maybe took place there that...
Trump really backed away from that over the short term anyway. But I think the process is continuing, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
It was a sabotage attempt. I mean, you know, he's trying to sabotage the investigation into him and his sons and his daughter and his son-in-law. The other amazing thing that I learned from Michael Moore's movie, he starts the movie out by saying, you know, Donald Trump is president because is it Gwen Stefani, the singer? Because he discovered that she was being paid more for being a judge on The Voice than he was being paid for being a Celebrity Apprentice. And so his presidential announcement was a stunt designed to get the attention of the NBC executives. And he went ahead and he had two rallies planned. He was paying people $50 a person. They hired actors, $50 a person to stand up and be there and applaud him. And then he went to these rallies and discovered that there was a bunch of people who actually liked him, and they were enthusiastic about his being president and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, whoa, really? I mean, it's...
Yeah. I just wondered if... I was just hoping maybe Rosenstein was showing some backbone here and I put my foot, you know, this is down. It's like saying, hey, this is all about... If they press him, if he is asked to resign or whatever, if he steps up and says no... This is all about, I refuse to release classified materials to this guy, period.
You think that's what's going on? I think that may be a piece of it, but I think the largest piece right here is that Rosenstein is every single one of these successful prosecutions by Mueller, whether it was the little fish like Papadopoulos or the big fish like Manafort, every single one of those had to be signed off on by Rosenstein.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what it's all about.
Maybe showing the way, you know, getting some other people involved, saying, hey, we've had enough of this.
Yeah.
Putting our foot down. We're crossing the line right here. No more.
It's going to be real interesting, Larry. Stuff is just flying around us right now. Larry, thanks a lot for the call. And thanks for listening to us in Oklahoma. We'll be back. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Speaking the truth, the multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back with your calls. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, the penny has dropped. Rod Rosenstein is staying on his job until Thursday, and maybe much longer than that. He had a telephone conversation with Donald Trump this morning. Trump is in New York for the UN and won't be back in D.C. until Thursday. So, you know, he had a phone conversation with Trump, and, you know, apparently it went well, I guess, and we'll see what happens. So that crisis is in abeyance for 3 days. The crisis machine, Donald Trump, is out of town. So we'll see where it all goes. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Well, let me pick it up from this notion, Donald Trump, the chaos machine.
Yeah. I am the storm, he said.
Right. I am the storm. This is important. Important. I am. Donald Trump thinks he's God. Norman Goldman plays a clip, kind of a funny clip. Remember when Donald Trump, well, remember during the campaign he said, I alone can fix this problem.
Right.
And then it was right after he made the 2 Corinthians,
right.
And they were criticizing about that, and he said, I am a great Christian, and I am. Okay, I want to, evangelicals ought to know this, because I just went, oh my goodness, the blasphemy in that. Just to say that I am a great Christian is enough, but then to follow it up with I am.
What was the name that the Bush told Moses? He said, "Who are you?" And the Bush said, "I am."
It's Exodus 3:14.
Yeah, there you go.
Moses said to the Bush, "Who shall I tell the people you are?" And the Bush said, "I am."
Right.
Okay, and then you have, and this is part of what's in the Gospel of John, and what it means is the 7 I am statements of Jesus. I am the resurrection, I am the light, I am the bread of life. Donald, when he says I am, he really means this. He doesn't mean I am just a storm. He said, I am, and what did the Bush go on to tell Moses? He said, I am. In extension went to say, I am your God.
Right.
And this is what Donald Trump really thinks. He thinks he's your God.
I think he thinks he's a God, not the God. And I think that that's probably a perspective that is not uncommon among men of his class and age.
Well, I think more it's not the God. It's because in Exodus, the Bush is telling Moses, I am your God.
Right.
The God of Abraham, your God.
Yeah, that's true.
Donald Trump thinks he's our God, the
right.
God of the American people. He, in fact, he's called us his people before.
Yeah.
He said that to a foreign leader. He says, I wish my people behave this way.
Behave like the North Koreans behave around Kim. Yeah.
Yes.
Or the Saudis behave around MBS. Yep. Mohammed bin Salman. Spot on, Paul. Spot on. And a great point for stepping off the conversation. Lisa in Las Vegas. Lisa, what's on your mind?
Morning. I don't know if you're familiar with Norman Vincent Peale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember him from when I was a little
bit
kid.
On Google, and apparently Trump and his mother were followers of his power of positive thinking.
Yep.
And it went on to say, can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Okay, and it went on to say, change your thoughts and you can change your world. And to add to what the last caller was just saying, how Trump would say, just listen to me, don't listen to anyone else, I know more than the generals. And then the article goes on to say, the trouble with most of us is that we would rather be ruined by praise than saved by criticism.
Hmm.
And apparently some considered him dangerous because he had this hypnotic effect on people. And I guess Trump is kind of dangerous, too, in that way.
Yeah, yeah. We do have a crisis in that we have an apparently mentally ill person in the White House and apparently increasingly incompetent. When you compare even just, you know, statements he made in the 80s to today, he's clearly losing it. On the one hand, on the other hand, he has always been a bigot and a racist and a misogynist, And now we're seeing that writ large. Lisa, thank you. Well said. Osuna in San Diego. Hey, Osuna, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Okay, I want to disagree with you with that general strike thing that you were talking about a little while ago.
Yeah, it was Chauncey DeVega was suggesting that we should have a general strike. I'm skeptical that it would work in the United States.
Okay, well, there's 20 prisons on strike right now, two in Canada on strike right now. Mm-hmm. These people, these prisoners don't talk to each other, but somehow they made it a general strike.
I thought that strike had been resolved. I thought it was a 14-day strike and it's over now. Is that still going on?
I'm sorry. I haven't kept up with democracy now. I thought it was still. But the point is, they at least they got their point through, right? And these, the strike did work for them.
Well, to some extent. They didn't get, they got no coverage in the media, which was very unfortunate. And like I said, I don't know if it's still going on or not, and I should, because we were talking about this on the air.
I know, right? But the point is, if we all stick together and slowly, it's not a fast-paced thing. It's something slow that we all get together, have meetings, and then something can happen. It'll be something that I think we need something because I don't want a revolution. I think that should be done before a revolution so they can get the messages that we want something done.
Yeah, there you go. Well said. I'm sorry, Osuna. My hand was halfway through the button. Omar in Herndon, Virginia. Hey, Omar, what's up?
Thank you so much for taking my call. I just want to make the point that this assault on our democracy, this assault on our Supreme Court, putting people who are not qualified, this assault on our election, this is the equivalent of tank being on the street. This is the equivalent of military being on the street. So we have to get together to be able to vote this man out. In 2018, we have an opportunity to do that. All we have to do is deliver the Senate and the House to the Democrat, and he will take care of himself.
Yeah. Well, that's a strong argument for getting out and voting. Amen. Thank you, Omar. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. I just kind of wanted to add to what you and Chauncey DeVega were talking about. You know, every time I call in about a foreign affairs, in the importance of it in Donald Trump's authoritarian campaign, you know, someone will call up and say, you know, they're a Trump supporter. Donald Trump hasn't invaded any countries and ISIS isn't celebrating in the streets. Well, both of those points are kind of moot because we haven't invaded any country in years. We don't use that language anymore. But recently, like this weekend, what happened in Ahvaz in Khuzestan in Iran, I think everybody should be paying attention to because the Iranian government's saying they're going to strike back against Israel and America's proxies. All right.
Has it been determined whether that was a MEK terrorist group or whether it was a Sunni? I guess MEK are Sunni. Or maybe not. Maybe I've got that wrong. But whether it was an Al Qaeda linked group. I know ISIS claimed credit for it, but the reports I was reading at the time a day or three ago were very skeptical of those claims.
Yeah, it could be Baluch. It could be Balochistan as well. I mean, we've been using.
So this would be a regional dispute.
Yeah, well, we've been fueling these proxies all over the Middle East. And Saddam Hussein said, and this goes back to your reference to Vietnam. Saddam Hussein, he said that he wanted to fight a North Vietnamese style war against America. That's why he handed out weapons and released prisoners. He decentralized everything, and we all laughed. You know, it was too little, too late. But I think from the grave, Saddam Hussein's going to come back and haunt us because I think this is exactly what's going on, and it's the path to American fascism. Small f. I don't mean any disrespect. It's not Nazism, okay? But I think. One terrorist attack, all the journalists, the Fourth Estate is going to fall right into line. They're going to support Donald Trump and say, for the good of the country, we need a strong father figure. It's from my point of view, it's really horrible what I'm seeing. But anyways, I think you're hitting on the periphery, Tom.
Yeah, no, I share your analysis, Dave. Thank you. And let's hope not, right? Alexandria in Colorado. Hey, Alexandria, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Tom, I don't believe that. I believe Trump is a very insecure, unintelligent, ignorant man, and I think he knows that about himself. all his life he's had to portray a brazen, virile attitude, and that's why he goes around espousing the very opposite of what he actually is. He's very fearful because he knows he's not a god. He knows he's ignorant. He's not a man of the people. He's not a man of intellect. I believe there's a big blue wave coming in November, and I hope that the Congress can undo everything he has done. I don't believe Kavanaugh will be confirmed. I would hope that Citizens United is overturned. There's many, many things a Democratic Congress could do to help return us back to what America is supposed to be and has proposed to be for 300 years or whatever.
Yeah.
I believe somebody very, very intelligent, like yourself and other people, could knock down Trump very easily.
Well, we'll see. There are some great candidates. Alexandria, thank you for the call. There are some great candidates on the Democratic side. I mean, it's not like there's a shortage. We have an embarrassment of riches here. It's just, you know, a matter of seeing where it all goes. We'll be back. Bob Ney will be with us in 4 minutes.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
4 minutes from now, we're going to check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world. Stick around. And welcome back. Susan in Pittsburgh watching us on Facebook Live. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
Hi.
A longtime listener.
Thank you.
I've listened so much to all this religion, the religious aspect to Trump's inauguration. And I was one night when I couldn't sleep and it was late and I was scanning the channels, the religious channels. And they were signing off on one of the channels and said, we have to get Trump into the White House, that he was going to cause a nuclear war and herald in the coming of Christ.
Wow.
Okay? I mean, this shocked me. But honest to goodness, I heard this with my own ears. And I know through scanning those channels that he talked to numerous religious people, you know, these pastors, whatever, on this channel. And I know that the religion behind his getting inaugurated is just astronomical. And I just think they are so far to the right that it's scary.
Yeah.
You know?
It is, and they're playing some serious games here. Now it's just being reported, literally just now, that Donald Trump knew about this second accuser. You know, in advance, and obviously, well, Chuck Grassley did, and all this other stuff. So, but the deal that Trump made with the religious right was, you know, I'll give you what you want, you vote for me. I mean, it was real simple.
Right, and you know, for them to be, well, I know, you know, God, you know, like David and Goliath. I mean, a lot of the people that in the according to the Bible that God used, they weren't true religious, you know, people. I mean, they were sinners and. But they've got these people so wound up. I mean, I've got family members that are just so out of it, you know. That it's scary.
Yeah, yeah, many of us. Many of us do. Susan, you know, persist. I really believe that eventually, you know, we're gonna turn this thing around. Lisa in Olympia, Washington, listening on KBCS. Hey, Lisa, what's up?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've heard about this march through Public Citizen a while ago, and every time I hear it mentioned, I get this horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. Are we giving this administration an excuse
for martial law?
Are we being pushed into giving him an excuse to do something like martial law? I mean, I hear about we want to take to the streets. I don't hear any speculation on what the responses will be, and are we prepared for them?
Yeah.
So I just, you know,
on the one hand, on the other hand, if we don't go into the streets in protest and you know, make our voices heard and be visible, then, you know, our silence is taken for consent.
But I think that the organizers, it might be helpful to lay out, or, you know, get people involved in understanding what the consequences might be.
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying let's, you know, we're a little bit educated, but, you know, give us some more.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Okay, Lisa, thank you. Thank you very much. It's going to be real interesting to see how it all plays out. It really is. Bob Ney will be with us up next. Stick around. We're checking in with Talk Media News for the news of the day. We'll be right back. Let's check in with Bob Ney with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. Bob is the author of Sideswiped, this report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. So Rosenstein is going to wait until Thursday when he can have a sit-down with Trump, or Trump is going to wait until Thursday to fire him or whatever. Is that the latest?
Right. He had contact with the White House, and everybody anticipated he would go over to be fired, but he's been told that the president's in New York, of course, and we can get to that in a second, at the UN, and then when the president comes back, then they'll sit down, which is very fascinating because I'm more to believe the side of what I heard in D.C. this morning, which was he was going to be fired today.
Yeah.
I don't know what type of personal conversation, you know, they're going to have with each other, but obviously we all know that election night or the next morning, one of the two, the president will fire Sessions. So I'm just wondering, is this a sit with the president face-to-face, and the president's going to feel him out where he's at on all of this, with the president knowing that Rosenstein knows that Sessions is gone? We all know that.
Right.
Sessions is going. There's something.
Or is Rosenstein going to go into the meeting with a wire?
Well, I thought about that. Everybody else has taped the president.
Yeah,
I kind of thought about that.
Amoroso did it.
right. And Rosenstein's denying that he, you know, tried to get the you know, the staff to invoke the 25th, or that he, you know, was wired saying those things. But
it's just.
Everybody knows the contempt that the president has for Rosenstein, and they know the contempt he has for Sessions. So I think this is kind of fascinating. There had to be some kind of feel-out between the chief of staff and Rod Rosenstein today that led to this Thursday meeting.
Yeah.
And would
General
Trump
Kelly.
Dare at this point in time to attempt to seek, you know, verbally, wired or not, especially not wired, any type of, you know, commitment out of Rosenstein? Because, look, Sessions is going to be gone. So are they kind of trying to send a signal, you can be the attorney general, but where do you stand on Mueller?
Oh, that's interesting. That had not even occurred to me.
Sure. Where does he stand on Mueller? Because,
well, he's signed off on every single one of these prosecutions that Mueller has done.
Right, and he could be the attorney general, because Sessions is, the only reason Sessions is existing is because privately Lindsey Graham and a few of the senators said, okay, we're going to yield to you. You can fire him, but you've got to wait till the night of the election or the next day with the midterms.
Right.
That's a fact. They've told the president that.
Wow.
So I'm just wondering if they're feeling it out. And then in that case, if he doesn't seem like he's going to be conciliatory, they get rid of him too.
Yeah.
And then they put two new people in, and then obviously they will most likely undo Mueller themselves.
Yeah, and I'm thinking he's probably going to be reaching out to his U.S. attorneys. You know, keeping in mind that Sessions was a U.S. attorney, Chris Christie was a U.S. attorney. You know, a number of elected members of Congress were formerly U.S. attorneys, and they can swim in political waters just fine, thank you very much. Adam, what's his name from California, the guy on the Intelligence Committee, was one, as I recall. And then we get a couple of people whose names we don't recognize and who are going to be Trump functionaries. So, anyway, what else is going on in the world, Bob?
They want it. Well, the president's at the UN. I find this very interesting. Of course, he's going to give a speech tomorrow, which we know he will go after Iran. in light of this terrorist attack over there, Javad Zarif, who negotiated the Iran deal on behalf of Iran, came out and said, you know, he knows that these were forces basically backed by Saudi Arabia. And, of course, we back Saudi Arabia, so, you know, that's been thrown out there. I think the president will go kind of semi-wild on Iran tomorrow because I think the president's being led by the, you know, in military-industrial complex towards, you know, and the Saudis and Israelis, et cetera, towards doing something confrontational with Iran. You can just see it, you know, building. Yeah. So I think a lot of it's going to be there on that aspect of the president tomorrow. Today, Tom, very interesting. You know, the president may be using the UN right now to kind of take all the woes away, you know, the Kavanaugh woes and everything, try to get a little bit of publicity for a couple of days.
Well, presidents traditionally do that. When things are not going well domestically, they pull a little foreign policy out of their back pocket.
Yeah, and Trump has been quite frankly successful on that as he's went overseas. As brutal as he can be at some of those meetings, he's been successful. But this time he's addressing a high-level meeting on the global call to action of the world drug problem. And what I find fascinating about this, as we talk about doing something, especially about opiates and about opium, I find it absolutely amazing. The opium production's up. We went into Afghanistan. We could have burned the fields, and we never did anyway.
Right.
So I find it quite fascinating.
Well, no, we were actually essentially bribing. Northern Command or whatever it was called.
Right.
We were essentially bribing them by letting them keep, you know, stay in business. And this is after George Bush had actually, you know, paid them, $30, $40 million to burn the fields, and it worked. You know, it dropped opium production to one-sixth or one-fifth of what it had been prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. What else is up, Bob?
So I found that to be interesting. And then also the U.S.-China trade war intensifies, but on another dilemma, the president's got a NAFTA dilemma, because trade watchers are calling September 30th the AMLO deadline. That's for the new leader of Mexico.
Yep.
President's got a little dilemma going.
Yeah, he's got a Bernie Sanders style Democrat coming in as the new, you know, AMLO as the new president of Mexico, and it's going to be a whole new thing to reckon with. Bob Ney with Talk Media News. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.